What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off.
Eyal Herzog is the creator of Bancor and creator.eco. In this conversation, we discuss his background, how he got into crypto so early, what Bancor is, how it works, and a couple of new announcements that are changing within the project. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do as well.
Skirt, skirt!
Want to know who has the best URL? Crypto.com. That's right, Crypto.com. They're a crypto platform with one goal, motherfucking mass adoption. That's why we're all here. We're trying to get crypto in every wallet. Crypto.com is helping people do that through buying, earning, lending, and card payment. Everything you could want at Crypto.com. Go help your boy out. Tell him Pomp sent you. Download the app or visit Crypto.com. Pomp's got you, always. Ever wanted to get into mining and didn't know how? Don't worry, your boy Pomp's got you. Everybody got some electricity and Wi-Fi. All you got to do is go to CoinMine.com. You buy a CoinMine. It's like an Xbox or a PlayStation that helps you turn your electricity into Bitcoin. That's right. You purchase it, it shows up at your doorstep, you pull it out of the box, you plug it in, connect to your Wi-Fi, 5 minutes or less, you're mining Bitcoin. All you have to do is control it from the mobile app they provide, and then you receive over-the-air updates that add new coins and new features on a consistent basis. Kind of like how Tesla does over-the-air updates and updates the car software. Just you're updating your coin mine. Consumer mining made easy. That's right. Go to coinmine.com, tell them Pomp sent you, and thank me later.
As many of you know, crypto investors store their digital assets on exchanges or in cold storage for long-term safekeeping. However, this strategy doesn't help them grow their investment holdings or build overall wealth. With the new BlockFi interest account, users can now securely store their Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. 6% is an absurdly high rate. It's the best rate in the industry. I highly suggest you go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, that's BlockFi.com/pomp to sign up and start earning crypto today.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, bang, bang. I am here with Eyal. Thank you so much for taking the time to record this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sure. Let's jump right into your background. You've been building technology for a long time. Maybe just, you know, help us understand where it all started.
Yeah, well, it all started when I was 7 years old on an Apple II machine. It was 81. And, you know, I fell in love immediately. I was, you know, a programmer as a kid and, you know, even doing some business software when I was 16. And I was essentially located to the Israeli intelligence, to the same program that years later, Yoni Assia from eToro, that was always also a guest of yours, was joining. It's the PC Boys, a special program. They take just, you know, kids that know how to build software and just drop tasks on them with absolute no training. And I spent there 4 years, and that was for me, you know, maybe the defining 4 years of my career. I kind of got exposed to large system, to databases, to, you know, I was running a network with over 1,000 computer at some point. So I learned a lot. And, you know, everyone that is released from that unit is immediately grabbed into some tech startup. So when I left, it was 97. I joined a startup. It was sold to Cisco after 18 months. It was building internet protocols. And at the same time, I was using kind of the first stuff that was on the internet. It was like, you know, email and Pointcast, like old software. And ICQ was like the big thing, the growing ecosystem of, you know, a growing community of users. And I was using that. And it was three Israelis that built that. And I was like, I was so amazed by their success. And all of a sudden, you know, the startup was sold to AOL for $400 million on 98. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. And I was so inspired. And I decided to actually leave all my unvested shares at Cisco. And, you know, in general, I didn't like the whole idea of big company. And I started my first company in 98. It was contact.com. It was one of the first social networks. It was using a desktop application. It wasn't even a web app, because there were no web apps in 98. And that was a big hit. And we got money from Mitch Kapoor, the founder of Lotus, from Excel Ventures. And, you know, I was like the Israeli internet star at the time. And it all ended in April 2000 when the market just crashed. Like completely, I was, you know, going around with VCs trying to raise, you know, the next round for my internet startup, and no one wanted even to hear about anything has to do with the internet at that time. Even that it was a social network with real identities that was personal and professional. Anyway, we had to shut down the company. That was very hard, but we did that. But I still believe that the internet was like a big deal, so I was trying to get money to my other idea that I was having, which was essentially user-generated content. I always thought that was fascinating, because I got all those viral videos in email, and I thought to myself, this is a new kind of media. And in 2003, I was actually able to raise $50,000 on valuation of zero, if you can believe that. The only reason I got shares is because I put $20,000 out of those. For a company that I started called MetaCafe. MetaCafe was one of the first video sharing sites online. I think probably it was the first. And it also started as a desktop application, because bandwidth was too expensive in 2003. And we actually had to move the video files peer-to-peer between the different machines. And, you know, the prices went down in 2004 and 5, and we released our website, and it just exploded. We went for 4,000 or 5,000 users every day to like 1 million users every day within 6 months. Just exploded. And it was bigger than YouTube at the time. And for us, it was like, you know, a very challenging experience, because, you know, to scale those kind of, I would say, environment, the LAMP stack, Linux and MySQL, there was no one in Israel that knew even how to build on those technologies, because everyone in Israel used Microsoft at the time. It was the first internet startup that actually made it to, you know, to the top 100 website in the world, according to Alexa. And as we were dealing with all that, it's just YouTube like took off like crazy and was acquired by Google. And, you know, we saw their number just exploding so much faster. I mean, we thought we were big, but we didn't even realize that there was so much potential. And for me, you know, one of the biggest lessons from that time was, you know, I have no way to say it, but it was my miss that I didn't figure out that online video is really going to be very different than television in the sense that it's not going to be about the hits. You know, when we watch TV, it was like, what's the best movies, the best TV series? It was always about the hits. But it's nothing like that with online video. With online video, the hits, you can find them on Reddit videos. Well, that's not very interesting and not getting many views. I mean, 99.9% of the engagement is in the long tail, a concept that didn't really exist on 2003 when we started MetaCafe, but, you know, came out, and I kind of realized what's happening a bit too late at that time, and that was my big miss, the long tail. So I started to dig into that and to kind of research that. In 2010, after 7 years at MetaCafe, Yeah, it was obvious that YouTube was winning. It's, you know, we were second, but it's a winner takes it all game. So I actually moved back to Israel. I lived like 3 years in the United States at the peak of Metacafe. I moved back to Israel and I actually started to use the technology that I helped create, I started to watch videos like all day long, kind of expanding my mind, I would say, exposing myself to the long tail, if you will, which was a very defining experience as well for me. I learned a lot. I changed a lot of my views about many things. But the thing that hit me the most is that in May 2011, in one of the blogs I was following, I saw a one-hour-long episode about Bitcoin. And my mind was blown. I was like, oh my God, I couldn't stop researching that thing for a whole month. I sent an email to everyone in my contact list. I said, take a look at this thing. This is amazing. Buy it. It's going to be great. It was $6. And, you know, just go and buy it. This is going to take over the world. And, you know, people were replying to me, hey, yeah, you have a virus. And then I was like, you know, sending in another email, you know, it's not a virus, it's me, Eyal, your friend, just, you know, take a look at this. I live to regret that because, you know, 2 months later, Bitcoin actually peaked at $30 and then dropped to $2. So, you know, whoever bought Bitcoin thought that I really screwed them. But, you know, those who had patience still thank me until today. And it took me like a year to even learn how to talk to people about Bitcoin, how to express it, how to explain it. It was very, very challenging. And I was, during that year, I was very active on the Bitcoin Talk Forum. You can, you know, look at my username there is Eyal. It's my first name. And I was kind of toying with different ideas, with different concept. Initially, I thought to build something like what BitPay is doing, and I you know, I was introduced to the BitPay guys, and I said, okay, so someone is building that. Let's try finding something else. Then I thought maybe I'll build a DAO. I'm actually talking there about the concept of decentralized organization that I thought, you know, could be possible with something like Bitcoin, and that seemed also too early. But after a year or so, I think I got to the conclusion that I think the opportunity is in, you know, in my big miss from Metacafe. It is in the long tail of currencies because, you know, whenever you remove the barrier from creating anything, whether it's, you know, a blog post, like if you something someone writes or something, some recording like this podcast and a video or even a marketplace, when anyone can create that, what you're going to get is a long tail. Because when you remove the barriers, when you reduce the cost of failure to zero, and you achieve a low cost of failure, people are going to try stuff and, you know, some of it will work, most of it won't. And it ends up being a long tail. And I'm saying, you know, what we're seeing here is that all of a sudden to issue token, an asset, a currency that anyone in the world can use from their mobile phone, the cost of that just dropped to zero, essentially. That's a big deal. And we're going to see a long tail. And where it would be and you know how it would manifest, that has been my journey since 2012 to this day. When you know we're just about to release our platform for essentially user-generated tokens and to kind of target the long tail. So in 2012, we started with essentially building a platform with a company we created called AppCoin, which is a platform for tokens. And back then, you know, you couldn't build so much on Bitcoin. So we actually built it on a centralized system just to see how users interact with a currency that is not their, you know, fiat government issued money. And we issued a currency for a mom's group in Facebook, a popular mom's group. And we told them, hey, you know, you can trade within the community with this currency. And we built an app for them. It was with integrated marketplace, with a wallet. And the currency was quote unquote pegged. So we told them, imagine that every unit worth one shekel, the Israeli currency. So the currency was issued when they joined, they got some. When they, posted something for sale, they got some. So we kind of used that as incentive for engagement, and we started issuing the currency. And within a few months, it just exploded. It's exploded to the level that 10,000 active users were actually performing something in around 1,000 deals per day. Transactions. And what they did is they bought jewelry and toys for their kids and clothes and even services like massage and anything you can imagine. They just traded with that kind of local community currency, and we were very happy about it. We thought actually that we figured it out, but little did we know that we're going to run into difficulties. So after like a year or so that it was running, and we tried to do it with additional community, we ran into a problem that, I can talk for 2 hours just about the analysis of that, but the wall we ran into was the wall of liquidity. I mean, the problem was that those currencies, they were like disconnected islands from the world economy. You couldn't buy them with your shekels, and you couldn't sell them to you with your shekel like you can do with Bitcoin. And that kind of created an isolated island of value transfer that had issues because of that. And we started to think of how we can solve that. And we didn't really find a solution until 2016. In 2016, we got really familiar with Ethereum and with the concept of smart contracts. And as I got familiar with that, it felt like maybe there is a solution there for the problem of liquidity of user-generated token for the long tail of currency. Because what's blocking the long tail of currencies is that, if you create a currency or a token or an asset, it's no exchange going to list it, no market maker going to trade it. So it's just not going to be liquid by default. And with smart contract, it feels like there's might be a solution there. And I started working on that and researching and trying to figure out what can be done. And that was how Bancor Protocol was born. Bancor Protocol was actually the initial version. Most people don't even know that, but the initial version of Bancor was just supporting user-generated tokens. So initially we thought about building a smart token with a single reserve of another currency. It took us like 2 months to figure out that, you can actually have two reserves in a smart token. And if you have two reserves, meaning that you're holding this the token that holds different currencies and each one is like 50% reserve ratio, then you create what we like to call the token relay. And the token relay is what Bancor network is built upon, which is essentially a smart contract that lets you exchange between any two assets and guarantees liquidity between those two assets at all time, regardless of volume. That's kind of the big change. This is the same thing that was adopted by initially EOS for their RAM trading. This is how EOS RAM market works. Then it was adopted by Uniswap. Took our model one-to-one to build their network. Then it was adopted by Tron. So the whole idea of a smart contract that holds two tokens and the way that the price and the rate between them is calculated based on the purchases is something that actually came 2 months later before we released Bancor, but after we thought about the initial concept. And then we released it. In February 2017, we released the white paper. The responses were like initially very mute. We couldn't get any momentum. People, like, they couldn't understand even what we're talking about. What do you mean you solved liquidity? It sounds like like weird that there could be even a solution like that. And you know, we were in the DevCon of Ethereum presenting it, but you know, people, it took time for people to even understand what we're trying to say. It took us time to figure out how to say it as well. And as we were moving into the initial token sale that we had at June in 2017, we were like, you know, traveling around the world, telling the story, and slowly but surely, we started to gather momentum around the concept. And we were like completely shocked by the result of the ICO. I remember a few days before that, one of our seed investors told me, you know, what do you expect from that? And I told him, look, you know, if we get like a few millions, that will be great. And he said, yeah, if we get, you know, 3 to 5 millions, that will be amazing. No one expected like, you know, $153 million in an ICO, and that was a shocker. And it seems like, you know, after our ICO, it's like just all hell broke loose. I mean, you know, people were doing much like, it was a world record for like a few weeks. You know, then I believe it was Tezos, and then and obviously EOS that did a $4 billion ICO after us. So it was a crazy, crazy period. And at that period, we felt, you know what? What we were dreaming about, that, you know, the idea of user-generated token, that people can issue tokens easily that will be useful, it's happening. Look, you know, everyone is issuing token. We are seeing the long tail of token being formed. And we kind of focused on supporting that, and you know, that's why we have like 150 different tokens that we added to the Bancor liquidity network. And we know what happened later. It's like everything crashed. You know, everyone believed that, you know, this is the future, and let's fund these teams, this groups, and you know, something good will come out of it, some great product, great solution, great adoption. But none of it has happened yet. And I'm like probably the oldest one in the group, so I'm like, you guys, I've seen it before. It's okay, you know. The speculators can lose their belief completely. Again, I was trying to raise money for a social network in 2001 and failed. I couldn't raise a dime for a social network. There's a lost belief, but the technology behind Bitcoin and behind blockchain is a world-changing technology. It's much bigger than the internet, and is just now about finding how it will get adoption and what will be the first killer apps and what will drive it. And you know, we've been focusing on building our own service that uses Bancor liquidity network for user generated tokens that we are actually launching today. And also on evolving Bancor. And you know, luckily we did raise a significant amount that allow us to go through that very long winter. But you know, I do feel like you know, there is a change, and things are starting to pick up, and we see a lot of interesting trends like decentralized finance and all those things.
How do you think that you guys were able to raise so much capital compared to those who'd come before you? What was the difference?
So I think that the main thing is that we were the first group that were a consumer software, consumer service developers, seasoned consumer service. The entire founding team, you know, some of us came from a social gaming background. I came with a background of Meta Cafe that, you know, had it like 50 million users every month, and even Contact before that. So our experience was, we were not techies. We are not technologists. We are not coming to build, you know, the next best blockchain or anything. We were here to build a solution for the masses. And we had a demo that actually allowed people to create tokens on Ethereum. Before our ICO, it was on testnet, but people can just go and create their tokens, and those were liquid tokens, and they were working. And I think that people really like the fact that we shipped all that solution that I think looked pretty good before we even went to the ICO. We were actually the first, I think, the first ICO that released its product to mainnet at the ICO. I mean, we took like 10 days in order to kind of prepare the stuff. But 10 days after the ICO, Banco Liquidity Network was up on mainnet. So, and you know, the code was out there, and we explained to everyone that this is what we're going to do. So I think that was very different than many other ICOs that were just promising things that will happen in the future. And we're like, yeah, this is working, and we're going to do the ICO and launch the network. So I think people really responded to that as well.
Got it. And so let's get into some of the announcements that you guys have, right? Let's start with the liquidity changes that are going to occur.
So, you know, our goals is basically to get more liquidity, to get more developers to work on the Banco Liquidity Network, and to get more community governance. When I say more liquidity, so, you know, one of the things that we are working on, for example, with one of our partners, and this is announced again today, is something called the Bancor Stable Token, or USDB, which is essentially a stable token that is similar in some sense to DAI and to Maker in its structure, but it's collateralized by BNTs. And the reason that we're doing that is because we feel like there is a great need for a lot of people that want to provide liquidity to be able to reduce their speculation to a single asset. So it's much more sensible to speculate on a stable coin and another asset, which is what you do when you provide liquidity at Banco Liquidity Network. So this is those kind of things, supporting developers that are building those kind of solutions is our core focus. Also with a CoTrader, we have launched essentially a permissionless liquidity portal where people with self-service can just create their own relays on the Banco Liquidity Network, and they can, you know, contribute liquidity to existing relays. And we're looking at a solution to allow the liquidity providers to essentially set their own fees, because that's also, this is how liquidity providers get rewarded for the volume that is occurring on whatever liquidity pool they're supporting. Those kind of things are like our top priority with the liquidity network. And of course, expanding it to additional blockchains, because we go where the activity is, where the users are. You know, we started on Ethereum, but we talked from the first day that we want Bancor to be a cross-blockchain liquidity network, because, you know, obviously liquidity is something that you don't need only within a blockchain, but between blockchains. People, you know, today use exchanges, and those exchanges are using, you know, are connected to many different blockchains. And if you're going to have a decentralized liquidity solution like Bancor, then it should operate between blockchain. And we actually almost a year ago, we launched our cross blockchain solution, which I believe was the first one in production, maybe even still the only one. People can actually move their BNTs from Ethereum to EOS and back, and using our system, they can convert any Ethereum token to any EOS token with a single action, and everything will just happen automatically in the background to support that. So as we
why would someone want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would someone want to do that?
To convert between assets? You know, this is the only thing people can or are doing today in the industry. It's all about speculation right now. I mean, if you look at the entire space, the only use case, and it makes sense because there are no mass adopted solutions at this point in time, but at that point, you know, people speculate, and they speculate by buying different currencies, different tokens, and change them, you know, and change their bets from time to time. And what Bancor is allowing to do is to do that in a completely decentralized way, and to also support small assets that don't have a lot of volume and provide liquidity for those. So, you know, just like people want to use Binance that support both EOS and Ethereum and Bitcoin, we believe that as a liquidity network that essentially providing an alternative service, and just like Uniswap, it's an alternative to an exchange. We need to support multiple blockchains. We shouldn't be focused on a single blockchain. And we see our users using that a lot and very happy with it, with the fact that they can convert EOS to Ether and Ether to EOS, just, you know, with a complete non-custodial solution.
Got it. And then let's talk a little bit about kind of the Ethereum-based model versus Ether, EOS, and then moving to this multi-blockchain model. Talk through first, you know, what the goal is or what's the driving force as to why to do this, and then maybe cover some of the technical components of it.
Yeah, so when we launched BNT, we launched BNT as a smart tokens, like, you know, a dog fooding, if you will, that has 10% reserve in Ether. So, you know, whatever the market cap of BNT at any given moment, it holds 10% of that market cap in Ether within the smart contract of the BNT token on the Ethereum network. And that's how we launched it, and that's how, you know, that drove the liquidity of BNT throughout that time. We never asked for any exchange to list us because, you know, you can just convert Ether to BNT and BNT to Ether on-chain using our service. So we didn't really need to be listed in exchanges to have liquidity. But as we expanded to EOS, and we plan to expand to additional blockchains. So now this tie into Ethereum doesn't make as much sense as before. And what we're planning to do is essentially to take the Ether reserve that reside within the BNT smart contract and create essentially a relay between BNT and Ether, and essentially distribute in some fashion. We were working on how it will work, but distribute that relay to all the holders of BNT. So we're actually giving the liquidity of the Ether liquidity of BNT to the BNT holder directly, and they will become proud owners of the Ether BNT relay themselves, and they can choose to do whatever they want with it. So this is a big change for us. And as part of this change, you know, we are essentially making BNT an inflationary token with a default inflation of zero. And that's very important because the community can actually decide collectively to raise the inflation or to keep it as it is. But they can raise the inflation in order to support strategic liquidity pools. So, you know, support them by dropping BNTs into them and encouraging liquidity providers. They can use the inflation to support developers that are building on the Bancor liquidity network. They can use the inflation to sponsor oracles that are actually using a multi-signature model connecting BNT to additional blockchains. So those things will make the Bancor liquidity network more independent and more, I would say, long-lasting in that sense, that you know, it can sustain itself for the long term. And, you know, we're giving this control to the community because we believe that, you know, the BNT holders should be the one deciding on the future of the Bancor liquidity network.
For sure. And then as you're moving forward, what's the biggest risks that you face?
The biggest risks, I think that for us, just like any other new technology developer, that you can't expect, you know, what will come about, and you know, and what kind of competing services will appear, and how well they will work. And you know, I strongly believe that the future is all about blockchain, and I strongly believe that the ability to issue an asset is something that has proven to be useful and is proving itself more and more to be useful every single day. So I do think that a solution for that will be needed. You know, there's always risks when you're dealing with smart contracts. You really don't want to, you know, find a critical bug and at any point that could be a real challenge. And you know, we know what happened to the DAO, right? And there's always, I would say, a risk of just not being able to see the future as it unfolds, because this is what we're doing. We're trying to essentially guess what will be successful in the future, not just us, you know, hundreds or if not thousands of different groups. And guessing wrong is always a risk, but it's really good that so many people are trying and guessing, because guess what? Some of us will get it right. And we just hope that it will be us, at least that on the side that of the people that got it right. But there's always the risk that we're not.
Got it. And so you're of the mindset, basically, the more experimentation, the better, right? There's no kind of sacred cows.
Oh, of course. You know, I think that every industry in the history of technology is proving that point. You know, I've been in this industry for, you know, actively working for more than 20 years, and I can tell you it was always, you know, so many on, whether it was networking or the first internet infrastructure, whether it was the first web apps and the first mobile apps, it was always about experimentation, endless experimentation. And that's how you discover, you know, what people really need. Because if people need something, they will just adopt it and it will grow and it will explode. And you know, that's how evolution works. That's how nature works. It's experimentation, and when something succeeds, then everyone can look at it and learn from its success, and it leads to, you know, the next wave of innovation. So, yes, I'm a very strong believer in that.
Got it. And then maybe talk a little bit about this idea of the inflationary aspect being controlled by the community and how that emulates a DAO, essentially.
Yeah, so you know, basically we're using I shouldn't go too much into details because it's pretty technical, but the model that is called weighted median. So, you know, everyone can essentially vote on what they think should be the inflation, and based on the amount of token each voter holds, you actually take the weighted median of that vote, and that will be the inflation. And every token holders can also vote on which parties should be the recipient of that inflation, and voting on how many parties should receive that inflation. And using those mechanism, you essentially allow the community to express their opinions without creating camps and tribalism and those kind of things, because it's very, you know, should I say mathematical in its nature. You just say what you want, and the smart contracts calculate the majority will. Because the idea of weighted median is that if a group of people vote on different numbers, the weighted median would be exactly the number that 50% of the token that voted for that number or less, and 50% voted for that number or higher. So that's the fairest the most fair system that I can think of for a large community of holders to decide on any particular parameter.
Skirt, skirt.
Want to know who has the best URL? Crypto.com. That's right, crypto.com. They're a crypto platform with one goal, motherfucking mass adoption. That's why we're all here. We're trying to get crypto in every wallet. Crypto.com is helping people do that through buying, earning, lending, and card payment. Everything you could want at crypto.com. Go help your boy out. Tell him Pomp sent you. Download the app or visit crypto.com. Pomp's got you, always.
Ever wanted to get into mining and didn't know how? Don't worry, your boy Pomp's got you. Everybody got some electricity and Wi-Fi. All you got to do is go to coinmine.com. You buy a coin mine. It's like an Xbox or a PlayStation that helps you turn your electricity into Bitcoin. That's right. You purchase it. It shows up at your doorstep. You pull it out of the box. You plug it in, connect to your Wi-Fi. 5 minutes or less, you're mining Bitcoin. All you have to do is control it from the mobile app they provide, and then you receive over-the-air updates that add new coins and new features on a consistent basis. Kind of like how Tesla does over-the-air updates and updates the car software. Just you're updating your coin mine. Consumer mining made easy. That's right. Go to coinmine.com, tell them Pomp sent you, and thank me later.
One more word from our sponsor, BlockFi. Their new interest account allows you to securely deposit your Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. This rate actually compounds, so you receive a 6.2% APY, which is very attractive given the alternatives. So you can actually take your Bitcoin, you can deposit it with BlockFi, and get paid an interest rate of 6% in return. Go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, BlockFi.com/pomp to sign up and start earning interest on your crypto today.
As part of that, you know, I think a lot about these DAOs and kind of the potential is incredible. Obviously, we've seen some of the downside in the past. What's the timeline for this to be pervasive if you think it'll ever get there?
So, you know what? One of my inspiration about that is actually MakerDAO. I mean, if you think about it, I think Maker is probably the most, if I'm not mistaken, is the most successful token today, both in terms of adoption and in terms of market cap. In terms of adoption, obviously, I'm talking about DAI, which is the product of this DAO. And, you know, the way, for example, that they upgrade their mechanism, which we definitely plan to adopt, is by community voting. So using the holders of MakerDAO's voting, they can upgrade the mechanism that actually runs their DAO, and they can add more features. This is how they change the interest, actually. This is how they're gonna add the multi-collateral capabilities to DAI. So I think the model is, as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty much proven itself in probably the best, most successful use case for a token today. And again, as I said, I think it's critical that we look around, we see what works, and we learn from that. And that's a great example to learn from.
For sure. Let's talk a little bit about Creator and what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, so Creator Eco. So it's probably should be up by the time this is broadcasted. Creator Eco is essentially a solution that is built on top of the Banco Liquidity Network, where anyone can create a token for free. It's very simple. You don't need to be crypto head in order to use that. You sign in with your phone number. You have a web-based wallet. It's everything in a single solution. You don't need to use any external solution for that. So anyone can create a token for their channel. So I'm actually going to launch my own channel. For the first time, I'm launching a video channel on creator.eco. Because of MetaCafe, I have a really nice YouTube channel name. I'm youtube.com/Eyal. I'm going to launch my video channel, and on creator.eco, I'm going to issue my token that is called Eyal Eco, E-Y-A-L-E-C-O, which is like a seven-letter symbol. And the way that it works is that I'm going to have my premium content and as well as premium Q&A sessions for supporters, as well as many benefits that are open only for token holders. So let's say if someone is holding 100 tokens, they can actually go and watch the premium video on my channel, where it's like an unlisted video on YouTube. Or if someone holds 150 token, they can participate in a Q&A session or ask me anything session on Hangouts that is later broadcasted in the channel. And if someone is holding, 200 tokens, then I will have a one-on-one session with him, just a private consulting session or, for whatever purpose. So I can offer all those perks, I would say, in a similar way to how Patreon is offering perks to supporters of YouTube channel. But the main difference is that with Patreon, it's a monthly subscription. You pay $10, $20, $30 a month. And based on how much you pay and how big is your support, then you get access to different perks. And with Creator.eco, it's not about how much you pay, it's about how much you hold. So if you hold more tokens, you actually get more perks. And it's also visible within the community. So some of the features are not up. This is beta. But if I post something in the community and I have many replies, the reply is going to be sorted by the holdings of the members. So those who hold the most token, the reply will show at the top. So it's a kind of a way to give clout to an audience and get support using a very different method. Now, the token that you issue is a smart token that has BNT in the reserve, and people can buy it and sell it. And just like any other smart token, just like BNT was, when people buy it, the price of the token goes up. When people sell it, the price of the token goes down. So it's really a good idea to maybe, first of all, look for creators when they're small, but it's also incentivize those people that hold the token to kind of spread the word about the channel, because they become more vested in the channel and they become stakeholders, if you will, and become part of it for its success. So those who hold my token will have much more incentive to kind of share my videos and tell the story about this channel to other people than people that are just mere followers, or even people that support you on Patreon. So it's a very different model to get support for creators, and it's actually closing a big circle for me, because MetaCafe had a program. You can actually search for it. There's many articles about it from 2007, I believe, called Producer Rewards. MetaCafe was the first video sharing service that actually shared the advertising revenue with those who uploaded videos, their own videos, not the videos that they own, the copyright, and we're checking that, and we just shared the revenue with them. So we believe that supporting creators was very important more than 12 years ago. So now I'm actually releasing a system that can support creators and allow them to engage with their audience in more ways that is just using tokens, their own tokens. And this is the first time that we are essentially releasing a product that is not targeted at the crypto market. Because if you think about it, most of the solutions, the successful solution, the solution that got any kind of adoption in the entire world of blockchain, are self-serving. And that's fine. This is how the internet started. I remember it like it was yesterday. The only users of the internet were internet startups and internet-related services and internet companies. These are the people that use email and the web, and no one else did, especially when it was dial-up, in the 90s. So today we are dogfooding more than anything. That's what we're doing in crypto. And And the reason I'm excited about that is it's the first time we're launching a service that is not targeted at crypto people. It's targeted on the mass audience, and we really, you know, hope to see it grow and succeed.
For sure. What's the one thing that you look forward to with the Creator Project that you're like, look, if we can accomplish this, that'll be an inflection point for the business?
The word I would use is viral coefficient, because the way that it works is that, let's say, you know, I'm a creator and I have, I don't know, 4,000 followers on Twitter. I know it's nothing compared to you, but still. And let's say I tell them, hey, look at my channel, and they come, and, you know, maybe some of them buy the token or not. But the idea is that there is a little button at the top right, always, which says create your own token. And if there's anything that we are hoping for, is to get more and more people trying it out. And that's why we're kind of working on having a low cost of failure. So it would be free. You wouldn't risk anything material when you're trying to do that. And what we're hoping to see is that every creator that has used that with their audience actually ignited their imagination of at least some of his supporters in order to try their own token, create their own token. And if that happens, then what you're getting is a positive viral coefficient. And when you get there, then this is the making of the Googles, the YouTubes, the WhatsApp, the Facebook. This is what drive growth with, you know, to maximum, to the billions. And you know, I just hope to see more and more people trying it out, experimenting with it, and see that it works for them, and bringing actually the next wave of users after that. That's what I hope for.
For sure. What's the one lesson you've learned in all the years now that you've been focused on Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, BNT, etc.? What's the one takeaway?
One lesson, you know, I would tell you the biggest lesson is that no one is immune from the euphoria when markets are going up. No one is immune. And on the other hand, is no one is immune from the depression when everything is going down. And I think that, you know, my most important lesson was that we should always just not focus on the market, not focus on price, but focus on building something that people want. And this is the best thing that we can do for the markets as well. You know, the reason that the internet after the crash in 2001 was able to climb back up is because people was using it. And I think, you know, we got carried away with all the hype. Definitely, like many others, we got carried away. And you know, today I feel like we are much more focused on solutions and advancing the technology than on you know, on the greater market and, you know, the all the hype. This is just it's a distraction, Bob, by the end of the day. And I think that was an important lesson from the last 2 years that has been quite a roller coaster, as you can imagine.
For sure. Before I wrap up, I always do rapid fire questions. What do you think is the most important company in crypto other than your own?
I would say, you know, I would say Maker. I think that they're leading the way in something very important, which is a stable coin. And no currency that is not stable ever circulated as money. So I think that's a very important step toward mass adoption.
What's the one regulation you would change or improve if you could?
You know, definitely would make it more clear you know, what constitutes security and what constitutes a utility. And I would, you know, I would make it more clear that when a token is being used to power a decentralized network that is controlled by its members, that clearly should be regarded as a utility, and you know, let people innovate with building kind of token-based networks. And there's so many concepts and ideas that can be experimented on.
What's your most controversial thought in crypto? Like when you say it, people will vehemently disagree.
So I guess my controversial thought is that I think that Bitcoin value is not derived from the fact that it's going to be the future of money. I don't think that's the case. I think that the Bitcoin value derived from the fact that because it was first, it became the most popular trading pair in crypto. It has more, it's the base currency on crypto, and which makes it the Dow Jones or the Nasdaq of crypto, which is kind of a safe bet on the entire market. And because the market is all about speculation, if you don't want to dig into the details or you don't understand the difference between the different projects, you know, buying Bitcoin is a safe bet on the market, and it has nothing to do with its technology or even its use case outside of speculation. It's just, you know, it's an index. It's a very useful index, and it's, you know, it has a network effect as an index, and that's what Bitcoin is.
Most important book that you've read?
Recently or
ever?
So I would say recently, Anti-Fragile really affected me by Nassim Taleb. If I'm looking in the longer term, I think The Long Tail is probably, you know, a very, very good book that explain internet phenomena and successes in a great way. So that would be my second.
All right. Aliens, believer, non-believer.
In aliens? Yeah. Of course I believe there are aliens.
Why?
Of course. Why?
Yeah.
I researched it.
What did you find in your research that convinced you?
Just too many anecdotes. Way too many to be all delusions, coincidence, you know, propaganda, misinformation. It's just, there's just too much. And I didn't, you know, I could keep on, but it's just overwhelming. But, you know, I think it's like Star Trek. It's they don't want to interfere with unevolved culture, so they keep themselves hidden.
it's crazy how many people have never looked, right, or researched it. I just, it's one of these things where it's one of the most fascinating things in the world to me is whether aliens are real or not. But I see all the time that people are, you know, oh, I don't know, I haven't looked at it. And it just feels like if that's one of the biggest questions in the world, why not take a look?
So, you know, first of all, I recommend to everyone, there's the guy that wrote the story of The Social Network that became a movie, and also 21. He's the guy that wrote the script for those. I forgot his name, but he actually have a TED talk about aliens and why I believe in aliens and why you should believe in them too. I recommend that. It's a very short talk, but it's really on point on that subject. And it's clear to me why people don't want to research that, because it's, you know, excuse my language, but it's like being a Republican in California. You don't want to hold an opinion that puts you in the crazy bucket. And people's opinions about almost anything is affected by the social circles that they have. And there's a great movie in Netflix about Flat Earth. And it shows you that, you know, flat earthers, they don't have a choice, even though their own experiments prove that the earth not flat, you know, one after the other. They don't have a choice but to believe in flat earth, because not believing in it would just terminate their entire social life. Everyone that they, you know, they become friends with, and there's no choice but to keep believing it. And I read a great sentence just the other day. No one can fool you as hard as you can fool yourself. And I think that's very, very true.
I love that. And the part that is great is those sayings, whether they're jokes or sayings, the ones that have the hint of truth are the best ones, right?
No, I do believe that. I people can fool themselves. We see that in crypto all the time. I mean, look at all the people that saying it's only going to be Bitcoin, and those other people that say it's only going to be Ether, and other people saying it's only going to be EOS, and other people saying it's going to be many. They cannot all be right, but they have such strong conviction in what they're saying. You can see that in their eyes. And you know, that's fine, because maybe you should believe that it's only going to be Ether if you're going to dedicate your life to building infrastructure in Ether. And maybe if it is Ether, you're going to be very successful. But I think that, you know, it's just how we are wired. We make our own reality. We can convince ourselves of anything. And when you accept that, then you're not as bothered by people that think differently of you, of what you think. It's just, you know, that's how it's going to be. And maybe that's good, because you might be wrong or they might be wrong. It's a good thing to have variety of opinion at any given moment, as long as you don't kill each other for it.
For sure. The last thing I end with is letting you ask me a question. What do you got for me?
Ask you a question. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about the whole Rubini episode that you had. I actually had, you know, I had a chance to meet him in a conference that we helped organize in Bretton Woods. A few months back, he was invited, and I had an interesting talk with him that he abruptly ended. He got too upset. But I wanted to ask you what you think about, you know, Rubini and your interaction, and why he thinks that, and even more importantly, why you think that so many people think that he won the debate that he had with BitMEX CEO.
Yeah, so I don't know that much about the debate. I think, look, he's a very smart guy. He knows exactly what he's doing. And, you know, here's what I always go back to this one saying where a buddy of mine in, I think it was high school, used to always say, real recognize real, right? And what that means is it's this idea of when you play a game and you see somebody else playing the same game, you just got to kind of say, you know, hey, look, I respect it. And I think Rubini is perfectly in line with that. And so if you look at all of the people who debate him, all of the people who argue with him, et cetera, they're all playing the same game, right? It's this game of controversy and awareness, trying to drive benefit, right? The benefit being either personally or for their business or whatever it is. He's doing no different, right? He is building a personal brand. He's getting paid to speak. He's doing all these different things. And I think for him, you know, we just got to understand that he's playing the role of entertainer sometimes. And he's got other, you know, ulterior motives. That doesn't mean that they're bad, right? It's just once you recognize it, then it all kind of makes sense, right? It just fits into a bigger story. And so that's kind of the category I put him in. It's no different than majority of people, right? So again, I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's important to kind of just understand, you know, if you look at him as an entertainer, he's doing a fantastic job of that. So keep entertaining.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he may have a point with some of his claims that maybe the techies that you know understand Bitcoin are not completely in the position to predict how the future of the world economy is going to operate, which many times they do.
For sure. Look, he's no dumb, right? He is no dummy, and anyone who thinks he is dumb is probably missing the point. So,
Yeah, he's an economist, though. He's not a technologist.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think he forgets that.
I think that he understands technology better than people give him credit for. So, We'll see. All right, man. Listen, yeah. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know that your time's very valuable, and so the hour you spent with us is much appreciated.
Of course.
And we'll get this out, and people can kind of hear about some of the updates to Bancor, and then we'll have to do it again in the future as you get more progress under your belt.
Oh, I'd love to.
Hey, everyone. Pop here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the 5 blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening, and see you next time on Off the Chain.